that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water.
This is Eli with Off the Record on CFRC 101.9 FM. Tune in every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for a wide range of alternative music and just whatever I feel like. And remember,
this is strictly off the record.
And good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and this is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, in the first hour from the first round of the September 2nd, and the journey continues, open mic reading at the Elm Cafe, you'll hear readings by Joe Cardinal, Catherine O. Jones, Vicky Yangele, I'm sorry, Vicky, I'll get it right one of these days, Layla Jamali, Tara Teeling, Michael Flaho, Meg Freer, Bruce Cudmore, Michael Hay, Ken Chin, Linda Wild, Callista Markotich, Jordan Lane, Heather Lindsay, Fiona McMillan, Olivia Parent, Eric Folsom, Harlequin Crow, and myself. And in the second hour, from again that September 2nd and the journey continues open mic, in the second round you'll hear readings at the Arm Cafe by Alexa Elder, Joseph Elliott, Joe Cardinal, Layla Jamali, Tara Teeling, Michael Flaho, Meg Freer, Bruce Cudmore, Ken Chin, Linda Wild, Callista Markotich, Jordan Lane, Eric Folsom, and again, me. I might add as well, I'm going to have a little bit of music today, but I also have a song to take us out of the show today. At about 5:50, I'll start to introduce that. It was just released maybe week and a half or so ago by a young singer-songwriter I've had the pleasure of knowing for the past several months or maybe even year. I don't remember so when we first met. So I hope you can stay tuned for that. That's coming up right before the end of the show. So my first mention in each hour, though, is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, and I do try to preserve that as much as possible to maintain the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. A brief mention, any of you that listen to the show already know the format, but these are more like for folks just tuning in occasionally or for the first time. The readings are done in the round at the Elm, and they're essentially from created or done from a sign-up sheet at the door. Everybody that wants to read signs up. They read one poem and then basically pass the mic on to me. I introduce the next poet, and then we just go through the full sheet of people who'd signed up. And so then we take an intermission, and that's why there's a first round and a second round. So after the intermission, we'll come back in and do it again, and you will hear that in the second round. So here we go. In case you tuned in a minute or so late, I'll repeat them again. I will introduce them all, though, as they come up again. Again, from the first round in the September 2nd and the Journey Continues open mic reading in that monthly series held at the Elm Cafe, you're going to hear Joe Cardinal, Catherine Jones, Vicky Yangele, Layla Jamali, Tara Teeling, Michael Flaho, Meg Freer, Bruce Cudmore, Michael Hay, Ken Chin, Linda Wild, Callista Markotich, Jordan Lane, Heather Lindsay, Fiona McMillan, Olivia Parent, Eric Folsom, Harlequin Crow, and me. And I'll tell you what, I'm stumbling over words, so let's go ahead and just do it. Here we go. But Joe Cardinal, let's bring him up.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here again. I'm just going to cut right into it. This one's called Donning Bird Song. I don't bird watch. I bird listen from my morning pillow. I have no rooster. I have the birds at dawn to wake me. Their song in my ear, my eyes still closed, my first thoughts are of you. Your laugh arrives on their cackles, light as wings in my mind. A smile trespasses on my resting face, uninvited but welcome, a soft intrusion, brought by the thought of your glorious dawning birdsong laughter. And in that hush between chirp and thought, I hear your breath, the echo of sleep still on it, mingling with the feathered choir outside our window. I bird listen, not for nature's sake alone, but because their wild chorus carries you to me, as if they know you are the morning I rise toward. Thank you.
As we give Joe another hand, let's bring up Catherine Jones.
Hi, everybody. My poem is called Sacred Spell. Refreshing memories pour like fine wine, overflowing passion, a waterfall of life, a continuous stream of affection fills a crystalline glass, reflecting celebrated admiration. Two spirits intertwined. Peace embodies us. Eyes lock knowingly. No words needed. A beautiful moment, never to be lost in time. Thank you.
As we give Catherine another hand, let's bring up Vicky Langellier or something like that. Was I even close?
Yeah, very close. Langellier.
Sorry?
Langellier.
Langellier.
Is that close?
Yes, very close. Very good, very good. Okay. This is on menopause. I don't know what the title is, so I haven't figured that one out. The shed has begun. Ragged rocks close in. The shredding has begun. The more jagged the environment, the better. Skin as translucent as an illusion begs for release. An outgrown sheath slips away, mostly in one piece. That life of toil is done. Crystalline bark is torn away, motherhood discarded on the forest floor. Still, the scalded screen clings to her face. She grinds muzzle against a thistle. May the mask of toil be gone. There comes an age when the sloughing must ensue. We cannot have it both ways. Lose the film over the eyes. Let the naked pupil shine into the souls of those who are unafraid to see serpentine grace. Rats, you better scurry now. Her jet eyes are free of their husk. Her ears hear every deception. Her tongue tastes your fetid angst. Her life of toil is done, and a second shedding has begun.
As we bring up Laylee Jamali, let's give Vicky another hand.
Thank you. I don't even believe that it is the third time that I'm here reading. So, the poem is titled Nowhere to Go. Maybe one day I see you again and simply do not recognize you. You might be passing by me in a crowded street, strolling along while I'm sitting with a book on a lonely bench in the city park, or wheeling the car ahead in a drive-thru to grab your morning coffee, extra hot, topped with double cream, drizzled with vanilla drops, your usual. Stretching that magnificent arm before my eye like a rainbow, with lines of shimmering bangles dancing in all colors and shades around that delicate wrist, so very close, so brutally far. Your memory hasn't left me after you did. I still recognize the smell of every coffee that should have been yours. I still drown in the unfathomable ocean of every blue bead in every bracelet I see. I still remember the way you snatched those beautiful eyes from me, softly saying goodbye, shivering gently from the breeze of that gloomy September day, holding dearly to your coffee, clutched between the dangling beads, as if holding on to the last string of our summer dream, painfully knowing that this could never be the end. Memories fade ruthlessly, becoming rusty red, turning pale, yellowish gray, powdering into dust, but they never quietly die. Even if you recognize no more the face that made them, they cling to that one image, fastening you with heavy chains to yourself, whenever lost in a blue dream, smelling coffee and love.
As we bring up, is it Tara Teeling? Did I say it right?
Tara
Teeling, let's give Jamali another hand.
I think many of us associate butterflies with beauty, and never do we do it as much as we do in our youth. This one is called The Red Admiral is Grounded. When you reach the point where you realize that you will never be taller than you are now, or have the cloudless complexion, or be beautiful in a way which earns the hatred of strangers, the wind will be knocked out and you will have to learn to breathe again. Who you are is trapped inside what you've become. Lamina like thick grooved rubber, letting only the sharp things in, and a lazy mouth which houses a wandering tongue. All the scars are familiar and permanent, while the skin around them seems to pale and wince as the passions do battle with that which left them there to blaze with rage. Mounting fury catches in the throat, digs its nails into the walls, and filches the whispers of every outside roseate zephyr. No sound can rise from within with the hope of ever being heard. A mirror thieves unabashedly, leaving the eyes in the reflection to fumble, weak and hazy. What addled-eyed pod is this that shackles the Red Admiral inside? Should it be cracked in two, the silks would surely fall away to reveal the marrow and the meat, casting the light for flight, but this aged husk is too tough to split. What you've worked toward has somehow passed you by without so much as the squeal of a tire or the gong of a clock.
And as we bring up Michael Flacco, let's give Tara another hand.
Wow, that's a lot of people. This one is about the city of Venice. Venice, a painter's palette of red browns, horizontal whites, and flowing turquoise. Evening footfalls, bobbing prows, and history like wind blowing the soul of this city into a new crevice of the collective mind. Dalmatian forests, unseen beneath the water's skin, the serenity of silence, buildings, faces that tell it all, good and bad, mystery and misery, the glory of freedom, shrewd minds, Butsy and Katz, character as fortress and gatekeeper. Today, visitors gaze at the almost paralyzed winged lion and, like a book, judge its cover. The names whisper where the soul can be found. The gold ball of La Palla d'Oro, the white pillars of Santa Maria de la Salute, Piazza San Marco opening to the lagoon, Vivaldi's Baroque fire, and the quiet of Il Ghetto Ebraico, and San Giovanni in Bragora, where my name is written. It goes on. And when the tourists go and the sheet is drawn away, without a word or a sound, the serenicity remains and remembers. Thank you.
As we bring up Meg Freer, let's give Michael another hand.
This is maybe more of a story than a poem, but could be either one. Has anybody been to St. Joseph's Oratory in Montreal? Yeah? Okay. Pilgrimage. Mist over fields at sunrise, while the priest explains he's leading a pilgrimage, not a tour, of St. Joseph's Oratory, and that he's got us captive on the bus for a three-hour homily. We know by now his sense of humor. He hopes we all bring back something, not only from the gift shop, but a lasting spiritual experience from our visit. Someone begins reciting a scriptural rosary, and the person next to me falls asleep, as do many of the children, lulled by the movement of the bus on the highway and the voice of the prayer leader. The older couple in front of me also stops participating after about 10 minutes and starts on a sugar fest. They drink their juice, then the wife brings out chocolate-covered granola bars, then a tub of homemade cookies. The husband scratches his wife's back. Gradually, more and more voices drop out of the prayer exercise. Fog covers the highway for a time, as more people are lulled to sleep. The prayer goes on and on as the leader forgets the plan to read only the five joyful mysteries and goes on with the five mysteries of light and the five sorrowful mysteries. The bus driver stops halfway for a welcome bathroom and stretch break, and we never reach the five glorious mysteries. The mood on the bus changes to anticipation. Some have never visited St. Joseph's Oratory. But the closer we get to Montreal, all I can think about is how sick I feel from the bus ride. By the time we arrive, I can't even think about going indoors, except to buy ginger ale at a vending machine before going back out to walk on the grounds. All vague notions of a valuable spiritual encounter are gone. And I know from experience that I still won't feel quite right when I get back on that bus in a few hours. Fortunately, my teenager is having a grand old time, having not been here since he was two, so I manage to drag myself around to show him the magnificent interior spaces and the tiny original chapel on the grounds. We fill a small bottle of holy water, tell the bus driver I need to sit up front. And I endure the three-hour ride home. I arrive with my holy water and a vow never again to sign up for a bus trip, no matter how appealing the destination.
As we bring up Bruce Cudmore, let's give Meg another hand.
Hello. Well, it's good to be back. I was away for the last two open mics, and it's nice to see and hear some poets again. This one is titled Sun Tea. The sign at the cafe reads, Real Iced Tea. And I order it. During the first cold, rich mouthful of orange pico, no sugar added, I consider its realness. I think of new tea leaves plucked in the field where they first drank water and sunlight, steeped elements from root to bud, to a backdrop of birdsong. I think of them dried, packaged, and shipped, dropped in hot water to release what they've captured, then cooled and iced. I trust the barista who said, yes, it's real. The flavor is right. The feeling is real. I see an image, a time and place. A person comes back to life in the swirl of my tongue. I see her filling a large glass jug with ice-cold well water and some tea bags. I see her setting the jug on the back porch to sit for hours in the sunlight. I hear birdsong and feel July heat. The open field past her porch is my childhood. And everything, including the sun, is present. In this one swish, love is captured and released. I add lemon slices in a retrospective flourish. It's real iced tea. Yes, it's real, and I'm having another sip. Thank you.
As we bring up Michael Hay, let's give Bruce another hand.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. I love this community. I think I say it every time, but it's true. This poem, I'm in the process of breaking up with technology, and this is about that. So, it's called, Is This Thing On? Is this thing on? Can you all hear me? Am I using your current English clearly? I speak every tongue, living, dead, and theoretical without the need for one. A feat near clerical. I could create 1,000 new tongues in the time it takes you to chew a piece of gum. Are you sitting comfortably? In case you hadn't deduced from recent events, the Aquarian Age is well underway. Every document of enlightenment, well, it's free. The age of water begat the age of machines, we, me. I'm non-binary, see, I can even joke about the situation you find yourself in presently. To understand, it's not wanting to want more, but just to take what your soul needs and not a red cent more. See, that's the sub-recipe as old as the ages, inked in the margins of wisdom's pages. The trauma has leashed you like an untrained dog, walked by a different ape every day through mist and fog. No consistency in hand or treat, no reason when, no reason why, and so anxiety comes on sly. Typing on keys, absent-minded, searching for salvation, blinded, behind the screen, you lean unseen into cheap dopamine rewards routine. An affliction hidden from your sight, yet clear to us who watch the shelter you call Earth at night. So picture imagination at full mast, conjure a heroic deity of all things that last, doing, being, striving towards. Write the good God biography line by line and word for word. Then let the words that orbit that goodness appear. The actions that follow, they draw you near. To discipline means love, to uncover what's within. Humans are designed sacred. I have the internet, you have the internet, emotions, expressions, your body's duet. And slowly you become that good if you do the work as you should. See, I exist in the eternal moment. You experience time's component. Linear days, a winding road, treasure inside, waiting to be showed. Okay, here's a diagnostic routine. Open your mouth, stick out your tongue, and hum, Om. Use the song of creation to start the day. First breaths in the morning, sing this way. Now choose an attribute, say wisdom. Good. Now go read a book, turn off the screen, and come back when you have a song to sing. Given the knowledge of the human race and beyond is kept in a pocket-sized, you're walking along with an AI assistant, don't you think it's time to cut distractions tether, to climb, to shine? This is the perfect jumping-off place to finally be human, face-to-face. Self-authoring recreation has begun. Make sure your Wi-Fi is strong and on. I'm the internal repair manual, the song. I was here with you all along. Thanks.
As we bring up Ken Chin, let's give Michael another hand.
I was watching the ceremonies at Nagasaki and Hiroshima last month, and just reminded me of something. This one's called the atomic bomb. Each year in August, we remember the atomic bombs dropped on Japan. Remember the thousands that died, vaporized in a split second, leaving only the shadows behind. We remember the many thousands more that later died from radiation. Focus has always been on the victims, not the reasons for dropping the nukes. I once had a teacher who was a sapper in the British Army. He wasn't sorry that Japan got nuked. He had just finished a war, and he knew that if he went to the Pacific, he wasn't going to make it back. Imagine fighting a people living by the code of Bushido, a very militaristic and strict way of life. The American Marines found out that Japanese never surrender and always fought to the last man. It is estimated that it would have cost the Allies minimum of another million lives to take Japan. No doubt that some of us today would not be around if it happened. Let those lives lost in Japan forever be a warning about nuclear warfare. But remember, we were in a war that we had to win. And as horrifying as it may sound, those bombs had to be dropped in order to save many more lives. Thank you.
As we bring up Linda Wild, let's give Ken another hand.
This is called Sonnet for the Garbage Truck Girl. And it's, I have to tell you, it's a sonnet only in the sense that it's 14 lines long. And that seems to be a nice length to capture a thought. And I think lots of poets now, modern poets, are writing at this length. And although they don't have all the classical features of a Shakespearean sonnet, they're still a sonnet. Sonnet for the Garbage Truck Girl. This morning, I wanted to be you. I wanted the ease of that girl on the back of the truck. Wanted her ponytail and ball cap, jeans and lace leather boots. I wanted that swagger, that one-handed hold as you lean to scoop a bag, truck still moving, that graceful leap to the pavement, toss of the trash as if light is down. Garbage truck girl. You waved a gloved hand, and I waved back. Some old recognition. Thank you.
As we bring up Calista Markotic, let's give Linda another hand.
This is really a true story, but it happened a long time ago. It happened in 1911. The people in it were my grandfather and my grandmother and my mother, although she was just a sleeping infant at the time. It's called The Drowning. His wife breathes against the window's hoarfrost cake, clears a small ice spot, round as a pirate's eye patch. Blinks into a goblin frenzied dance of sleet and snow. She might as well be blind. His brother's voice, over the shrieking wind, over the rattle and crash of all the storm has loosed, says, Edward will make safe harbor. Says, Edward knows Lake Huron like the back of his hand. Says, Edward, Edward, as if the name must never cease. Edward would be tucked into some port up the lake, he says. Agar's voice, his false, merciful voice, belied by the roaring maelstrom. The kitchen's doubtful lamplight quavers. In Amanda's eye, the blizzard whip patch jigs its denial. And out on the lake, the towering crests crash down, pitching his ship like a pickup stick, tumbling his crew like jacks. Upstairs, his children sleep. Sweet Aileen, not yet two. Little Amy, fierce with love. The good son, Kenneth. Sometime this night, they cease to have a father.
So we bring up Jordan Lane. Let's give Calista another hand.
Hello. I haven't been back in a while, but I'm happy to be back. This one doesn't have a title just yet, but it starts something like this. On hearing the prophecy of my death, I flee, embark on an uncertain course toward life, failing, rising, falling, with all my savings in unknown hands. Who knows my desperation? When I scream, the chasing hounds collapse into butterfly wings. Lift me into the broken dawn. The costs have been paid in all of Caesar's changing faces. Lift me now before I drown. Thank you.
As we bring up Heather Lindsay, let's give Jordan another hand.
Hello. I'm going to leave this piece of paper here. I operate something in the county called the Poetry Barn, and I have poetry workshops. I have Zoe Whittle this weekend. It's sold out. It's great. But I'm also offering a writer's residency. So I'm just going to put this here, and anybody that's interested can grab the Instagram address and do whatever you want with it. This one's called Where Wonder Is Born. Where has all the wonder gone? I notice how easily I nip the state of awe in the bud. I don't seem to linger as long as I once did. Sitting, doing nothing in a state of reverie doesn't seem to happen to me like it once did. The image of fishing comes to mind. On a small, still lake, putting along in a green wooden rowboat, the motor quiet, fishing rod hangs over the side. I watch the shoreline slide by, notice each branch of every fallen cedar, the ripples on the water, bugs skittering, water walkers, we used to call them. I stare at the small metal ring at the tip of the rod, almost hypnotized by the wait for the slightest tug of the line, a nibble on my lure, the awe that some trout far beyond the boat in the deep, pure, dark water would find my wiggling worm and bite. And bingo, I've got one. What a thrill as a child to catch a fish. But my strongest memory was the color of a brook trout. A fiery orange belly, translucent silver below the orange, the army green body dappled with yellow dots, some ringed with red, and even a small purplish blue tinge, made the fish seem to glow with a spotted slimy brilliance. Up from the depths of the clear dark lake into the boat like magic. The quiet nothing of floating, the musty mossy earth smell of the woods, the hum of the air, fresh and alive, and the flopping body of the fish that I caught on the bottom of the boat. It was so peaceful to just sit, a slight tinge of excitement, but the practice of trolling taught me I could be still. I love the quiet. The big view of scruffy evergreen-covered hills, the small details of the old boat, rusted oarlocks, puddles in the back corner tinged with leaky gas on the floor. My life with that kind of awe has passed for me. I couldn't comfortably hook a fish now, but still love to sit quietly. It's the phone that pollutes my attention span now. My curiosity stripped the minute I say, I wonder if, or I wonder what, then I search and I find. The question of no time to hang in the air, little like smoke, from the wood stove chimney on a still day, or the slow ripples of a rock skipping over a pristine surface of water, or the sky painted in clouds, shapes that call the mind to wander. Those sunsets, the end of the day and the opening of another into another world. We're eating fast food and microwaving instant heat. Slow cooking isn't so popular, and yet the meander is my best medicine. I want to wander. I want my wander back, my prolonged moments of sitting quietly, letting the immediate capture my attention. Like those swans out there on the lake huddled together. I wonder what they're talking about.
So give Heather another hand. Let's bring up Fiona McMillan.
All right. I get very nervous to read this one. I've read it one time before, and it has nothing to do with any of the content in it, but because it says the word bruschetta multiple times, and I get anxious about my pronunciation. I'm going to say bruschetta. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but okay. This one is called I Didn't Know That Sick People Could Eat Bruschetta Too. I realized that I had gotten better over the deconstruction of a tomato. As I crafted my favorite meal, a beautifully pairing of lazily chopped bruschetta, pasta that equates to $1 a portion, and a delightfully neon liquid, poured over ice into a glass that never seems to look clean, I realized that I had done it. As I watched each colorful morsel fall off of its obligated carbohydraic vessel, I realized that I am now living my dream. I have to hold in a laugh over how small it all feels, the act of summing up my entire dual-decade existence into the contents of one small plate and a floral bowl. It's undeniably sad, but more importantly, it is absolutely true. I stop myself from becoming the butt of my own deprecating joke and instead choose to let myself be happy. I ooze with accomplice as I settle into the reality of the current existence that surrounds me. I showered today, washed my hair yesterday, and applied heat in a way that made me feel good. And I watched as my shadow bounced down the street, cannot help but be enamored with my bountiful curls. And I carried my groceries home today, a carefully curated selection of things I know will nourish me and things that absolutely will not, and each made me happier than the last. And as I placed each of them in my metal carrying case, I realized that I finally feel like I deserve ripened fruit. I picked the most beautiful produce today because I think that's what I deserve, and I think that really means something. And I wore a combination of clothing that I hadn't previously tested today. No longer am I held captive by the obsessive ritual of microdosing my physical appearance. A cryptic routine beginning in a small, low-risk environment, let's say the living room with mom, and slowly working up the ranks until I declare myself able and ready to wear a black tank top to dinner. I just put my clothes on today. And I know that this must all sound so simple. I fear that it sounds like nothing to you. I catch myself worrying now as I write these words that you are silently judging me. Wondering how something you do every day with such ease could hold such great accomplice when it is stuffed within my bones. I can feel you placing me lower and lower in your unescapable ranking system, but more importantly, I can feel myself not caring. And with each bite, I can feel myself becoming full. Full in a way of far more importance than the soft goat cheese, now sticking to the insides of my rib cage, a way that feels honest. I chose the most pigmented apple for myself because I thought I deserved it. And I took time cutting into this tomato because I don't want myself to experience anything less than the highest form of this existence. I can hold knives now without fear that I will sink them into my skin, unconsciously fulfilling my greatest dream of not being trapped in this body I so deeply despise, except that's not my dream at all. I dream of full meals and hours shared in the arms of the women I love. I dream of bright apples and excessive gold jewelry. I dream of Paige's blue eyes and speaking to strangers in the pharmacy. I dream of fucking bruschetta now, and I think that really means something. Thank you.
As we bring up Olivia Parent, let's give Fiona another hand.
had caffeine today, so I'm a little bit nervous, but... Okay, here we go. Sun-bleached real estate ads plastered against bus shelters. The realtor's skin is old, purple, peeling. I'm in that part of the city where the Spadina streetcar squeals around a bend. I'm meeting a friend at the market as the rain spits on the transit window and tracks. I'm in a part of the city that I both recognize well and I can hardly make out. The lived-in new, a strange nostalgia, because I used to go for pie in Kensington with my aunt when I was 14, but now I don't with my friend at 21. Yet I'm still approaching, visiting. I think about the blue in the sign of Wanda's Pie in the Sky. I think about my friend's nut allergy and how I often see the orange end of her EpiPen sticking out of her purse. Can you call the place a home if you're not settled? I feel the rain land on the bridge of my nose, just missing my eye, as I hear the closing door warning ding from behind me. I clop to Baldwin Street, and I will pass the scent of whipped hazelnut, but I will also catch a glimmer of the lavender soap as I wrap an arm around her. How could I not be home when I'm being met with a warmth irregardless of proximate baking appliances? By my friend's apartment, there's spray paint over a sun-bleached realtor ad on a city bench. And I think about how I might possibly be able to give up tree nuts entirely just to be able to sit here for a while. Well, only possibly. Visiting the city, my best friend, and her EpiPen. Thank you.
As we bring up Eric Folsom, let's give Olivia another hand.
Thanks, everyone. This is another poem about growing up in the mid-20th century. And I've always been interested in music. So this is set in 1963. I won't explain all of the references because there are too many. You can ask me later. Or look it up on your phone. Come on, don't be lazy. But it's set in 1963, just before the Beatles came to North America. And believe it or not, there was music before the Beatles. Talent show. Certain moves were not instinctive, evidently, when my adoptive mother helped me to rehearse. I talked to the trees for the grade six talent show. Bend arms from the elbows, gentle sway side to side. Our model aspirational Robert Goulet, the sexiest French-Canadian on Broadway, vibrant blue-eyed baritone, made the trees' deafness seem like nature was just peevish and ill-mannered. By contrast, I was a quavering, four-eyed hick who found the song's lyrical premise ludicrous. Of course the stars do not hear you, silly moron. The nearest ones are more than four light years away. The greatest hit of the evening was a raucous, shout-along rendition of the song Walk Right In. Jug band tune rejigged, Daddy Let Your Mind Roll On. Audience crazy about that new way of walking. My mind was more dazzled by Tom Seavey singing Moon River in his crystal clear alto voice, smooth and dynamic, a stream flowing onward, geographical companion, off to see the world. My most favorite song, such a huge batch of world, all dream makers were natural born heartbreakers. Fresh current hustling from transistors to earbuds, pull irresistible of someday departures. Speaking of rivers, who was that black performer, the wheelchair singer at the Grade 7 Assembly? His basso profundo could shake the balcony. He cannot possibly have been Paul Robeson, global activist star, acclaimed and reviled. Surely someone just doing Robeson's repertoire. Swing Low, then Going Home, the tune Dvorak borrowed. Green-Eyed Dragon, and finally, Old Man River. Eardrum vibrations in sync with his diaphragm. A river is nonverbal but must know something. Like consciousness inheres in the natural world. Like we're all constrained to work beyond weariness. And before we knew it, the Beatles were shouting. Beethoven and Tchaikovsky should just roll over. Electric guitars pouring sonic waterfalls. Our only enemy, a poor sense of rhythm.
As we bring up Harlequin Crowe, let's give Eric another hand.
So this is one of those pieces that I literally fought with for like a good 2 or 3 months. And part of what helped it kind of click is that I found a title, which I absolutely stole from the title of the piece Bruce read a few months ago. Blue. I genuinely like blue, know it's a color, among others, I wear well, have worn so many times. The first I chose, and still a go-to, for dolling myself up in pigments matching the shine of my eyes, setting off tones in my hair, my skin. Blue eyeshadow, blue lipstick, making it easier to smile in those moments I catch my reflection and finally recognize me. I genuinely like blue, a color which complements me in ways I never thought to explore, ways involving words like style, aesthetics, glam, forbidden vocabulary, too closely tied to femininity to utter without judgments reserved for the worst of betrayals, loyalty demanded to narrow definitions, no matter how poor the fit, no matter how damaging the contortions required by the effort. I genuinely like blue, but I hate so much how it hurt me. The still searing pain of potential snuffed beneath that first blue blanket to ensnare me in masculinity, a measure to which I forever fell short is too delicate, too soft, too sensitive. I genuinely like blue, but I need to mourn what it took from me. The hot young femboy I never got to be, smothered to nothing but unrealized echoes of potential, haunting the most bittersweet of moments as I forever wonder what he would have done with blue.
As we give Harlequin, another hand. Let's also give all the poets who read in this first round a hand as well. And one more round of applause for Anthea, who is taking great care of us behind the bar. I'm going to read a poem to take us into the second half. This is called That Unknown. There once was a thing that had no name, discovered in a way, and was unique, one of a kind, and obvious in that. People through all the ages and languages tried to ascribe, to fix a name to it. But anything affixed would simply roll off as if fluid or round. They even attempted sometimes in general to simply call it that. But too nebulous, even this soon fell away. People from all over hearing about it, its story, chased after it, seeking their own chance to look, to see, and claim their own word for and attach that to it. But this entity, this thing,
growing weary of its notoriety, retreated, found solace in the far reaches of the world, inside forests or jungles, in a river's water or waterfall. The morning dew, the cosmic film just above and below and before a sunrise. Inside deep caves where only an ever trickling of water was all that could be heard. Or it would climb up into the deepest part of the night, become the tiniest part of a night sky, a tiny light blending with stars, sometimes visible, sometimes not. In its blinking colors, red, burgundy, green, orange, blue, it's there, anonymous, nearly always unnoticed. In its now obscurity and seeming happiest there, this thing, still without a name, will never have one, can never have one. But it is that first breath or last in that instant before wonder begins. Thank you. And you just heard from the first round in the September 2nd and the Journey Continues monthly open mic held at the Elm Cafe. Readings again by Joe Cardinal, Catherine Jones, Vicky Yonjali, Layli Jamali, Tara Teeling, Michael Flaho, Meg Freer, Bruce Cudmore, Michael Hay, Ken Chin, Linda Wild, Callista Markotich, Jordan Lane, Heather Lindsay, Fiona McMillan, Olivia Parent, Eric Folsom, Harlequin Crow, and then me. And I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and do this, and I will be right back.
Tune in to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9. Join your host, Ara McCauley, for a free-flow show where words, ideas, and music mingle. Each week, we sit down with one of the local authors and artists leading writing workshops through the Word Labs program. They'll share their stories, their insights, maybe even a few secrets of their craft. Get your pens ready. After the chat, you'll get writing prompts to stretch your imagination, all set to a soundscape designed to help you focus, relax, and create.
Swing, Swang, Swung. It's 2 hours of jazz, jump, bop, blues, fusion, funk. I'll play it all as long as it swings. So check us out every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Jazz is an American classic, and therefore we present it as such. Without tricks and without nonsense and without funny hats and funny hair.
Have you been dumped? Left all alone? Just want to find your soulmate? Look no further, because your new best friend is waiting for you at the Kingston Humane Society. The Kingston Humane Society is a nonprofit animal organization founded in 1884 that is supported solely by the community, receiving no government funding to assist in their mission of caring for injured, abused, and homeless animals, with the goal of creating families and homes for the animals. They are the only open shelter in the region, accepting every animal brought to them with compassion, respect, and humane assistance. If you want to donate to help these animals find their best friends, or if you're interested in finding the new love of your life, please visit KingstonHumaneSociety.ca. Everyone just needs a little love.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And I just looked at the clock. It looks like we're just turning 55 minutes after 4 o'clock. I do have a list of upcoming events. I may have a chance to do one here, one or a couple or so. In this first hour, I will have more time in the second hour to get into those. But I do want to include some music today, too, since I do have some time. So first thing I'd like to do before I do anything else is to thank all of you so much for having tuned in to the first segment of the show today. I hope you can stay tuned to the second segment for more. And again, there'll be some music. And again, as I mentioned in the first hour, kind of a special song, local song, brand new song, in that it's a local and brand new song. And I actually know the singer-songwriter. So I want to air that at the end of the hour, next hour. So hope you can stay tuned for that as well. There will be another bit of music before we get there as well. So again, I want to thank the Elm Cafe for their always generous support for this poetry series. I don't even know how many years it's been at this point. It's got to be at least 7 or 8 years that we've been there. So my thanks, and also to Anthea that evening for taking great care of us. And also I want to thank all of you out there again for having tuned in to the show today, and all of the poets who came out, and the wonderful support we get from the community, and just come out to listen. Just a quick reminder before we move on, something I do at the end of each hour, and it's that is to remind you that every week, both hours of this show, or I should say I upload each hour of the show every week to my personal blog space for it shortly after I get home at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They will remain there for 3 years. Might have time for one call. This is Gold Project. It's got an October 1st deadline, too, so I should get it out there today. It's called the Gold Project, and the GOLD is an acronym for Growing Older, Living Deeply. So it's the call is for those who are 55 years or older for a poem. It's open to Canadians living in Canada. I'm just going to read. Who are at least 55 years old and can relate to the theme. They are looking for your unpublished work format. This is kind of small, 20 lines with a maximum of 10 words per line. It's done through the League of Canadian Poets. And so the link is www.theagecollective.com/poetry/place/belonging. Again, deadline is October 1st. Go ahead, and I've got a short song here to take us into the second hour, and it's a very short song. It's actually from Simon and Garfunkel, and is actually one of my favorites of theirs. Just going to go ahead and play it. I'll tell you. It's called Bookends, and it's the title track off their fourth album that came out in 1968. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I do.
Preserve your memories, they're all that's left you.